Every single day I feel
the Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never knew I'm best, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Welcome back to the Woody Made Up Show here in That One Studio. It's your boy C-Rock in the building. Got another great guest for you today. Cannot wait to share. This dude's journey is awesome. Some of the stuff he's been in, some of us probably wanted to as we were younger too, and didn't get the chance. So we're going to get to find out what it was like to be a professional wrestler, to be a D1 baseball player. Some of you out there wanting a podcast, this guy's a podcaster, a speaker, and a coach as well. I got Aaron Mashbits in the building, and he's also a mental health and wellness advocate. It's at the core of everything he does. His massive transformative purpose is to end mental suffering through speaking, podcasts, and coaching. And he's living that purpose. What's up, Aaron? Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, dude. So look, man, this show's all about the ingredients that have gone into making the guests who they are. We're looking forward to hearing about how you got into some of the things you got into and what caused you to do what you're doing now. But we always start with the famous question that's written on the wall behind me. What are you made of?
Yeah. I'm made of a shitload of gratitude, a lot of curiosity, a little bit of pain, which I'm sure we'll get into, and a ton of resilience. And that's all that stuff was created by my experiences, whether that be in sport, whether that be from my parents, whether that be what I went through or continue to go through with the journey of my sister and her life. And so, yeah, that's what I'm made of. And I try to live that out, you know, every day of my life, you know, stacking those bricks on top of each other. So I appreciate the question.
That's right, man. That's why the bricks are behind me. Stack another brick in the wall. You know, it's what matters, man. And, you know, I think we'd love to get your thoughts on this. I think we all are persistent because we're all here where we are now. We've gotten through everything that we've ever been through, right? But the thing is, I think the difference is some of us are more aware of it than others.
100%. Yeah. I mean, I think very, very little of the time do we stop and be like, oh, man, like I'm here right now. Because, you know, mixed inside the hustle culture, there's this idea that we need to grind all the time. And I truly do believe in hard work. That's paramount to achieving anything you want in life. But I think also rotated in that idea of hard work is that you got to see all the little steps you've made to even be in this position that you're in, living a life, being able to breathe, have food on the table, whatever the case may be, whatever your journey of success might be. But we're always looking towards the next thing and not planting our feet exactly where we're at. You know, having a love affair with the present moment can also give us that gratitude for where we're at. And then, you know, it doesn't mean complacency for anything else, but it can mean also, okay, now if everything else was stripped away from me at this moment, I would still love this moment and the people I have around me, but I can still strive for more. And I think that's sort of a dichotomy that people battle with, like this idea of gratitude and complacency. But, you know, one doesn't have to feed the other. Gratitude can drive your sense of wanting to be better, but also knowing that what you have is enough and who you are is also enough. I think those are important ideas.
Yeah, man. I agree, dude. And, where'd your story start, man? Like everybody's got a story. Like take us back with, you know, what's some of the ingredients that have gone into making Aaron Mashbits who he is?
Well, baseball was my first love. God, I love baseball. What a beautiful sport. I fell in love with that at a very young age, probably 4. And that's basically been my whole life. I mean, I coach baseball now. I have a 9-year-old team. So I'm trying to pass on along that knowledge to some of these little guys who also love the game and like that. So baseball. All the lessons I ever learned were either from my parents or from baseball or the combination of both. And then around age 12, 13, my life drastically changed when I saw professional wrestling for the first time on television. I saw Edge, John Cena, those guys, if you guys are familiar with WWE, for the first time in 2006. It was the summer before I went to high school. And I was like, oh my God. Because at that time, like super into baseball, so love sports. Also was super into like Power Rangers, superheroes, things like that. Also was into theater. And when I saw wrestling for the first time, I was like, oh my God, this is the combination of all of this stuff into one. The first scene I saw was John Cena. I mean, you might not be familiar with the storyline, but I'll fill in the small details. goes to this, John Cena's goes to, or Edge goes to John Cena's dad's house. They're having an altercation. He slaps John Cena's dad in the face. And then they're like feuding all the way until SummerSlam. I was like, oh my God, there's so much drama. These dudes are huge. Their arms are bigger than my freaking head. Like, all right. And so, yeah, that incurred, I fell in love with that. And then that day I told my parents, I'm either going to be a professional baseball player, a professional wrestler. Who knows? They're like, cool, Aaron, you can do whatever you want. And my parents have always been the most supportive people on the planet. And so God bless them. Thank you.
Well, I got to stop you for a second. So did on wrestling, did you know it was fake from the beginning?
No, absolutely okay. Not.
I didn't know. Cause you know,
I was bought in, man. Totally bought in. Like, yeah. So,
and then how long did it take? Oh, go ahead.
And then, you know, later on I learned, you know, what was behind some of the performance art that was more of a performance art than sort of a, you know, legit UFC fight. But I think the beauty of professional wrestling is being able to watch something and suspend your disbelief and just fall in love with something for the moment that it is. You know, when Marvel was going amazing and they were producing all these fantastic movies, we thought Thanos was real. Like, that dude is about to take over the world, because for that moment in time, we were watching and we were in love with that thing. And so we can feel so passionate about something, it's unbelievably satisfying. I mean, I find myself watching things on YouTube about people watching the thing. Like, I'm not even watching the thing. I'm just watching how excited people get about watching the thing. It's so fucking cool. Like, you can't be not excited watching someone get excited about something they love. And so that was me with professional wrestling. And so I was wearing the shirts every day to school. A lot of guys on my baseball team thought I was a weirdo, but like, whatever, I was in love with it. And it gave me purpose. It wanted me to work out harder and train and all these sorts of things that it added to my life. And I knew that was the direction my life was going to go to. There was just no other option. I was going to play baseball or I was going to be a wrestler. That was it. So it was awesome.
And how long did it take you to go to your first wrestling live event?
Oh man, my dad took me right away. Begrudgingly, he took me.
Yeah.
Because when I first started watching it, I couldn't drive yet. So he was like, yeah, I'll take you. And then I met some buddies who also liked wrestling. So then we started going to the shows together. And so he was off the hook a little bit. But yeah, he took me to my very first Monday Night Raw here in Dallas at the American Airlines Center.
So I don't know if I told a lot of people this, but I had a wrestler at my wedding that was in WCW back in the day, Van Hammer. His name's Mark Hildreth, really. But Van Hammer, and he's 6'9", jacked, just like, built like a shit house, man, brick shit house. And he was just a crazy dude, but he knew all the guys, right? So anytime we went to a show or something, he would introduce to Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit, God rest his soul. God rest both their souls. A lot of them die early, unfortunately. It's a life that could be really, really fast, right? And so how did you end up getting in? Well, before that, like you mentioned your sister in the beginning. Let's talk about like your sister first.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of where the whole story leads. And so wrestling has a big part in that story with my sister. So I'll fast forward, played baseball in college, decided not to go pro in baseball because ultimately my dream was to be a professional wrestler. So I moved back to Dallas, became a professional wrestler, donned the name Jackson Stone. If you feel like looking that up on YouTube, you know, be my guest.
Well, how did you become a professional wrestler? You just don't go and do it. Like, what was the process for that?
Sort of like any other sort of performance art. I went to a school. I trained with some coaches close to Dallas for about 6 to 8 months. Then I had my first match. And then a lot of the training was just like on the job, having different matches with different people, getting out on the road, driving to different cities, traveling to different states, and just trying to hone my craft, hone my character, and hone who my identity was as a professional wrestler. And so I was pretty lucky early on that I picked it up pretty quick. So I was able to travel quite a bit and go to different countries and made professional wrestling my full-time job within 3 years of me starting in the business. And so then where my sister comes into play, I mean, she was always part of my life. She's the best big sister anyone could ever ask for. She was supportive in my baseball career. She was there at my very first wrestling match, recording it. She built my first website, like all of these amazing. She was a brilliant engineer. She got those brains and I did not, so thank God. But and then fast forward to about 2018, I'm living in Philadelphia, and my character at this time as a professional wrestler was Lights, Camera, Jackson. So basically I was pretending I was pretending to be a movie star. And so basically my whole life on social media was curated, was fake. I didn't really have any money at the time, but I used all of these things that I possibly had to make it look like, you know, I was this big star. Because that's what I thought wrestling was. Like, it's larger than life characters presenting this thing. And I wanted to be in WWE. So I wanted to show that I had that sort of charisma and that personality to do that. And I loved it, every part of it. Don't regret a single second of it. But then in 2018, while I'm living in Philadelphia, I get a call. The worst phone call of my whole life, that my sister had just killed herself. And for anyone listening who's gone through a painful, very painful, traumatic experience, your whole life changes in an instant. The way you look at something, the way you view life, the way you view your direction in life, everything. And so in that moment, everything changed. I didn't know where I was going to take my life because you can't know that quickly. So over time, I started feeling like sick to my stomach about who I was being at professional wrestling shows and who I wanted to actually be. I wanted to talk about my sister. I wanted to talk about how she struggled with depression and bipolar disorder and schizophrenia and how she battled through and what suicide actually looks like and why it's not selfish and some of these intricate details surrounding mental health and how it's a misunderstood topic. And but I felt like I couldn't do that while pretending to be this sort of movie star. And so I still wanted to be a professional wrestler at this time because this is all I knew. I didn't know what other avenues I could approach speaking about mental health. I just knew I had sort of a platform. I had fans. I had people that were listening to me. So I wanted to talk about it. So I slowly started to move away from the pretend and just be myself, still under my wrestling name of Jackson Stone. But I really just started to talk about all of these things. My catchphrase became Jackson Stone, everybody, because I wanted everybody to understand that we're all going to struggle with mental health. This is how we think, feel, and act. Now, you may not suffer from severe mental health conditions, say, you know, depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, but you are going to be sad and rejected and overwhelmed. And so there's different buckets for how we think about these things, but everyone is going to think, feel, and act. And that encompasses our mental health. And so the more we can become proactive about it, you know, the better our overall lives are going to be and the better that we're handling some of these things that come into our life. And so that's really what started to, that was the catalyst for basically everything that I'm doing now. It took me a while to sort of figure things out. And then, you know, I moved back to Dallas and then COVID hit. And that was really the sort of the turning point for everything, because it's very hard to be a professional wrestler when shows are canceled and people can't come to your show. So you're wrestling in front of nobody. We tried to do a lot of YouTube shows and stuff like that, but it just, you know, it just, if you ever had done a performance art, it's just not the same in front of no people. Like there's no energy.
It's like dress rehearsal. Yeah.
But it's too much. I'm getting slapped in the chest. I'm doing all these moves. It sounds like I'm making just a bunch of weird noises with my buddy. And so that sort of was the turning point for me. And so then I sort of went all in on my nonprofit, which is called You Are Loved, which is centered around mental health resources for professional wrestlers. Because of what you said earlier, there's way too many suicides that I can count in professional wrestling. And so I've been working on that for about 3 years. Like you mentioned, I have a podcast and I'm a public speaker and I coach baseball. And it's all centered around this idea of being proactive with our mental health. And again, mental health is not the scary, dark, in the shadows thing. There's a separate bucket for, again, mental health conditions. But I'm specifically talking about our everyday mental health that we have to be able to be proactive with how we eat, with how we think, with how we sleep, with how we move, with our relationships. All these things are available resources to us that we can utilize every day to improve not only our mental health, but just our overall well-being. And so that sort of encompasses, you know, in a nutshell, my whole life and how my sister, who's basically the angel on my shoulder, is moving me in that direction. Because all of the lessons that she taught me, I did not learn until she passed away. She was much more kind and open-hearted and less judgmental than me. I mean, when she was alive, I used to say, I hate everyone. You have to earn me or whatever. Like I was some sort of special godly being. And she was like, no, Aaron, just give them a chance. Like, they're just as good as anyone else. They have a lot of love to give and all this stuff. And then, I don't have time for that. You know, too busy, whatever the case may be. And she was brilliant, and she was resilient, and all of these lessons now that I'm trying to live by, based on her teachings as my big sister. And that's sort of where the gratitude comes in, as I answered your first question. And it's interesting to think about gratitude to the situation that was the worst thing that's ever happened to me and my family, and is still something that we deal with every single day. I mean, you can't imagine being a parent and having to bury your child. That's the fucking worst. It's the worst thing that it can ever happen to a parent in the whole world, whether it's your kid dying from cancer or suicide. Like, if you're a parent, you have to bury your child. It's fucking horrible. Excuse my language. I'm not sure if you curse on the show, but
yeah, no, it's fine. Yeah.
So, I mean, I spoke a lot there, but
no, that's fine. A lot to unpack there. I want to go to this part though, like being in a public figure and, you know, people knowing who we are out there and stuff. And then when we have things going on in our personal life, how did you come back to the public eye after that terrible situation? And, you know, B. Jackson, everybody at that point, like, what did you do first? Like, where did you, like, did you go out to social media, do a live and explain to people what's going on? Like, how did that work?
Well, I mean, I sent out like a tweet sort of explaining what happened. And then I tried to just pretend like it was business as usual. That just didn't work. I was like throwing up before matches because I was a heel. And so in professional wrestling, a heel means you're the bad guy. So my job is to get the crowd to boo me. So you're doing sorts of other things to get the crowd to boo you. And that felt bad to me because after the show, I wanted to talk to people. I wanted to see how they were doing. They wanted to ask me questions about my sister. And like, I felt like I couldn't do that because I was still playing this person character thing. And I also got a lot of messages from wrestling promoters when I started talking about mental health that were booking me regularly that said, hey, we can't use you anymore because you're talking too much about mental health and that's just not sort of tough enough for the show we're trying to deliver. And sort of those type of things that happen, you know, to men all the time, specifically about our mental health, we're told that. But in sort of the wrestling space that I was in, that was told to me. And so trying to figure out really the direction I wanted to go with my life. And I just said, you know, whatever, I'm going to do this because this is what feels most right to me. Regardless if it loses me money, I'll figure it out. And ultimately that was the right decision. I didn't know then, but I just followed my heart. And, you know, it was quite tough just to try to let go of something that was such a huge part of my life. You know, being Lights, Camera, Jackson, I mean, I developed this character over a very long time, you know, basically since I was 12 years old, manufacturing this person that I wanted to become. All to have it be dropped. Jeez. And to actually figure out who I was as a person and what values I wanted to live by and what I wanted to be remembered by and what I want people to, you know, talk about at my funeral or whatever the case may be. And so, yeah, very challenging.
Yeah. Did you play the character so much that you carried it into your home life too? And you have trouble like shutting it off?
That is the, number one thing that perils professional wrestlers. Yes.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, that's really where all the drug, sex, and sort of addiction problems come from. Because I'm out performing in front of a bunch of people and I get all this adulation and all this validation. And then, you know, maybe I go home to my wife and she's like, hey, Aaron, you got to take out the trash. I'm like, I'm not fucking taking out the trash. I'm a world champion. 300 people cheered me tonight. I'm not taking out the trash. And like, obviously, like, you're just like, that's ridiculous. But that's what happens when we fall in love with this ideal that we're portraying rather than knowing who we are to begin with. And then just being able to extrapolate a little bit of ourselves to play that character, but not fully being enmeshed in that thing. Because professional wrestling is very unique. And it's that the people who love it the most, it's also the number one thing that brings them the most turmoil. So they love it the most, but it also brings them the most turmoil. So it's a complicated balance to have because you don't know what to do. It's causing you great suffering and pain, but it's also the thing that you love the most. And so what I talk about now with professional wrestlers, which is useful for sort of anyone, because we all play a character at some point in our life, is that we have to understand what our identity is. And I define identity as your repeated beingness. It's very similar to what your question is, what you're made of. That's really your identity, because your identity is how you show up in the world every single day. So for me, it's with gratitude and with pain and with curiosity and with resilience. That's really my identity. And so if I know that, I can go and be Jackson Stone for 15 minutes in front of a crowd and then take off my, you know, my trunks and my boots and get in the car with my wife or my fiance or my girlfriend and still know, okay, my identity is this. This is who I am at this point, but I can turn it on and off. And so learning that is really important. I think it's important for everyone to learn that, because sometimes we have to shape shift a little bit in certain social situations because we are social creatures and we have to do that. But always understanding the underlying who you are, like at its core, is always going to be the most important thing, because then you can shine through with those values and your words and actions can line through those things as well. And it's an important part. So I learned that simply by having to really play a character and then being left with sort of nothing and having to rebuild my value structure from there to know who I am, you know, as a partner, as a coach, you know, as a podcaster, as a speaker, whatever the case may be.
Yeah. Look, this is good stuff, because, like, you know, there's a movie called Donnie Brasco, and Agent Joe Pistone, who Johnny Depp played, went undercover in the mafia. And then he carried that through back home. He went back home and his wife didn't even recognize him anymore. And they had problems in their marriage. And he was going kind of crazy because he was like, he just had to be in. But the problem was that if he came out of character, he could get killed, or his family could have got killed. And wrestling, it might not be death, but it could be, you know, you lose your job, right? You lose your way of living. And then we also see this a lot with veterans, pro athletes, besides wrestlers, pro athletes. And when they're done and that falls apart or goes away, then they don't know who they are anymore. And I talk about this a lot because, you know, I went through this myself. You know, I played college football. Then I went to the mortgage business. Every time I was doing these things, I was identifying with what I was doing versus who I was. And it wasn't until I realized, who the heck am I? And start leaning into that unapologetically and understanding. I'd love to hear your take on this, Aaron. I believe the things we do, we find out who we are. The things we do are our vehicles. So when we find out who we are, we kind of identify in a mission. We have a mission now. And to get to the mission, we jump in vehicles. Vehicles could be wrestling, could be baseball, could be the mortgage business I was in before, could be podcasts and whatever. And the key is when we can differentiate the vehicles versus who our identity is, we can hop out of vehicles with no problem, being who we are, going towards our mission. And so I love that we're talking about this topic and what you're talking about. Like, this is something I've, over the last few years, have really been leaning into, because I see it all too often. I interview people, veterans, like I said, athletes, all these very successful business people. Their business crashes. They go down the tubes because they don't know who they are. They go right with the business. So going forward now for you, I mean, obviously you have a mission now. Right. Do you see that? Do you like that concept that with the vehicles, hopping in vehicles, do you see that? And then what are your vehicles that you're using now?
I mean, I love that. I love that. But I also think there's an important point to make about, because I mean, I loved identifying as a baseball player. Like when I was in college, identifying as a baseball player, just like you in college with football, like it meant something. And I my ego was like, oh, I love this shit. This is good. And I wanted that attention. And the same with being a professional wrestler. But I love the vehicles idea, because you can take sort of any path you want. It doesn't matter what you're actually doing. You know that ultimately it's being driven by who you are intrinsically. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm driving multiple different vehicles, you know, whether that be in the coaching space, in the speaking space, podcasting, but it's all headed towards what I like to call my massive transformative purpose, which is to end mental suffering. Now, that won't happen in my lifetime, but if I can move the needle forward, that's the biggest, you know, possible thing that I can do. And when I say end mental suffering, I don't mean cure mental illness. That's other people doing other work in the psychedelic space that might actually be a possibility. When I say end mental suffering, I mean being able to handle life in a more healthy and direct manner with the sadness, with the overwhelm, with the rejection, with the heartbreak, with these regular human emotions that we're always going to feel because life is never going to be perfect. But our ability to bounce back, our ability to recover, our ability to use these obstacles to make us stronger, to fuel our growth, that's really where people's suffering lies. And because that's everyday stuff with everyday people. And so that's where really where the suffering lies. If we can just identify that as just painful moments or painful experiences or painful things, and then use that to learn and grow, because about, you know, I would say about 95% of our experiences we can grow from. There's the other 5% that just like really suck. And you don't need to learn anything from them. You just need to be able to survive them. And I understand there's a bucket of those things. But about 95% of things that happen to us, we definitely can grow from them. And so that's what I'm talking about with this, with my massive transformative purpose, to try and end mental suffering, try and give people the tools, the habits, and the protocols that'll help them, you know, live in alignment with their best selves so they can think and act and feel and flourish to the best of their ability. And so they can be the greatest version of themselves in greatest service to the world. I think that's the ultimate game.
Yeah, man. All right. Rock it out, dude. Let's go. Let's go. I love it. Fire me up. So, all right, let's take a step back for a second. I got a couple questions about baseball, wrestling, and also another third question I'll add at the end. Baseball, did you have what it takes physically and mentally to make it to the professional level, MLB? And if not, what do you think that you lacked?
I think physically, yes. Physically, yes. If I knew what I knew now mentally then, for sure, but I didn't know it now. I mean, I didn't know it then. I don't know if I had the juice to play Major League Baseball, but I was offered minor league contracts, so I could have played in the minor leagues. I chose that making $0 as a minor leaguer wasn't as fun as making $0 as a professional wrestler. So I chose that route. But I think what handicapped me was being a right-handed hitter and a right-handed first baseman. There's just not much for me to do there, and I was a slow base runner. My baseball weight was like 6'2", 230-ish. And so I was a very good hitter. I could play defensively. But I think what I had going on upstairs wasn't as ready as it would be now. Because I play in men's leagues now just so I can think about some of this stuff and teach it to my boys.
Yeah.
And I feel much more calm and relaxed and under control than I was back then.
Yeah.
I also take it a little less seriously now, and maybe that's I do think that's a missing piece for a lot of these young athletes. Yes, you need to take your sport seriously because it's important to you, but not too serious where everything is, you know, so right. tight. And so that distinction has to be made, you know, playing with intensity, but also playing relaxed. There's so many dichotomies like that in sports that are hard to grasp as a young athlete because you love this thing so much. But now later in life, I realized that. And so maybe as a 22-year-old, I could have figured that out. But yeah.
And how about wrestling? Did you have what it took to get to the WWE, you think?
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I have a lot of friends in AEW and WWE right now. If I had stuck with what I was doing for just a little bit longer, I would have been a WWE for sure. Don't know if I would have main evented WrestleMania. That's a different conversation. But man, yeah. I could talk on the microphone. I had a lot of charisma. I could move in the ring, and I definitely would have been on TV with some of my buddies. But again, that wasn't the path for me. And I'm a fan now of professional wrestling because it's given enough time where I stopped it, and I watch it on TV now, and I go to shows where my buddies are in town, and I'm like a little kid again. C-Rock, dude, I'm fucking fired up. I'm screaming. I'm throwing my hands up in the air. My fiance's like, dude, come to bed. It's 1 a.m. I'm like, I gotta finish WrestleMania.
it's
crazy.
Well, my favorite thing back in the day, so when we were watching it, when I got into college, we would have parties for the pay-per-views. That would give us a reason to have a keg party and
yes.
on a Sunday night, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, there were certain things like when they hear the glass break, like those kind of things, that the entry for Stone Cold Steve Austin or, you know, the Rock stuff or whatever. Like there were certain things like that that was just the best part. It wasn't even the actual wrestling and the actual moves and all they were doing. It was just the, oh, man, it's coming back to me now.
It's all the story and the drama and the, all that good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like Days of Our Lives. It reminded me of like a soap opera, you know?
That's what my mom used to say all the time, that exact show. She's like, you're watching the same thing as me.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it's, I watch it once in a while. I got to get back into it. Is it still as good as it used to be? Like, do they have still good storylines?
Right now, it's the best it's been in a very long time.
Okay. Okay. So I'll have to get back into it, get my kids into it. So the next question, This is the final one as we wrap this up. Have you ever thought about going into acting? Because that's acting, right? Mm-hmm. And then you like to play character, but have you ever thought about being in TV, film, or anything like that?
That was a goal of mine when I started to become a professional wrestler, because, you know, I wanted to be like The Rock, and he was doing that, you know, as I started my career. But that slowly faded away. That's not something I want to be into. I get my sort of my performance art now on podcasts and in speaking gigs. But I mean, if someone came to me with something cool, like out of the blue, I would obviously look at it with, you know, some important eyes. But it's not something that I would actively go and seek anymore. I used to, for sure, but not anymore. Yeah.
No, I've never seen lights, camera at Jackson before, right? So can you do any of that right now? Like, do you still have it?
I don't know. I can't really. My pose was too big to fit into the camera screen, and I don't have my blonde hair anymore. And yeah.
Oh, so you had blonde hair and you were wearing sunglasses all the time and stuff like that?
Oh yeah. I was wearing a gold jacket. I was just like, my trunks had sparkly gold stars on them. I had gold boots. I had some custom theme music. Yeah, the whole deal, man.
I freaking love it, man. I love it. All right. Well, look, man, with your coaching and everything you're doing, where's the best place to send people?
Yeah, I mean, my podcast is called Something for Everybody. So if you liked listening to me talk for the last 30 minutes, you probably will like that. I got guests and solo episodes. But you can basically find everything about me at aaronmashbits.com. So all the socials, podcasts, nonprofit, speaking stuff, all that's there.
Awesome stuff, man. Thanks for being here, Aaron.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me, man. I enjoyed the conversation.
All right, guys. Go check Aaron Mashbits out, man. Check him out. Let him know you heard him here on the What Are You Made Of show with your boy, C-Rock. In that one studio, it's C-Rock and Aaron signing off. Until next time, folks, make sure you subscribe, like, comment, check out my Instagram. We got a lot of content coming out there to help you stay unstoppable, to live in the life of your dreams. And until next time, be that one.
Music licensing reimagined.